did you find this?
Dude, Craig is early today.
Thursday night. We got our first prime football game on tonight. I'm pretty excited.
Evan Hull looks pretty good. This pass pro is really good. Anthony Richardson, the real deal.
Richardson didn't look that bad, yeah. He had, they're like 38 rushing yards.
Oh, man. Freaking,
yeah, it's almost the end of the second quarter, and they pulled him already. But, yeah, he had like, I think, 80 pass yards and like 38 rushing yards so far.
I think Josh Downs had like a gnarly drop too.
Oof. I was not watching. I was watching some Bray Wyatt matches in memory. Rest in peace, Bray Wyatt.
RIP. And the Funk. Terry Funk.
Yeah, Terry Funk, man. Fuck. Well, let's get all that sentimentality bullshit out of the way. We're here to hate tonight, boys. This is episode 96, sure. The hater episode. We're here to fuck shit up. I'm in a pissed off mood. Ryan, you pissed off?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. I got some hate. Ryan's furious. Shane, are you frothing over there?
Yeah, dude. I'm screaming about Jerry Jeudy.
Fuck him. Fuck him. All right. Before we really trash some motherfuckers, we got some numbers.
Hell yeah. Really quick before we start that, though, I bet you, I wanted to say something that happened today, and I bet you Shane's really excited for. Jeudy got carted off, and looks like it's going to be Mims time because the wide receiver class in Denver is decimated now.
Here's the thing, right? I didn't want my victory lap to be based upon injury. I wanted my victory lap to be based on my data of Jerry Jeudy is overrated, and he's a wide receiver too. I don't have high expectations for Marvin Mims, but the fact that like my victory lap includes someone going down, I'm not too happy with that. But at the end of the day, he is the number one target on offense because apparently Adam Trautman is out snapping Greg Dulcich now.
I'm so mad.
Yeah, what is up with that? Someone pointed out to me today at work. They're like, I just pulled up the Broncos depth chart. Why is Trautman listed ahead of Dulcich?
Honestly, dude, I think that team is just a whole fade. I think it's just going to be a big old, it's going to be like the really shitty KC last year where they're just going to spread the ball to 19 people and we're going to have no choice but to be like, who the fuck do we pick? So,
Remember 2 months ago when Denver was like a trendy bounce back option? I don't know, man.
Remember episode like 88.5 and I was like, hey, don't draft any of these players.
Nope, fuck them.
Hater segment has begun.
Haters. All right, Ryan, that's right. Start us off with a shorty, baby.
Sure. Let's talk about a more recent player in NFL history. Wes Horton, number 96, famously played with the Carolina Panthers. He was drafted in 2003. He wasn't drafted. He was an undrafted free agent. His rookie season wasn't that great. He only played in 10 games and had 8 tackles and 2 sacks. 2 years later, he was suspended for 4 games for violating the PED policy. Doesn't say what he tested for. But then the Panthers waived Horton. So they waived him in 2015, right? And then the Panthers went to the Super Bowl the year after that. Oof. He wasn't playing. So that was 2016 where they lost to Denver 24-10.
Yep.
So like this must have been a week or two after the Super Bowl. The Panthers re-signed Horton.
good job, Ron.
So he left for a year and it was the most important recent year in Carolina football's football history. And then he played for like another 2 years for them and finished off in 2019 with the Saints. And then in 2019, Carolina re-signed him again so he could retire. So he could retire a Panther. But the cool thing about this guy, you'll never believe this. His father, Michael Horton, former UCLA offensive lineman, played various years for, it says CFL, USFL, NFL, just a mid offensive line player. But guess who he went on to be?
The owner of Tim Hortons.
Nope. He was Gemini on American Gladiators from 89 to 92.
Dude, that's an era of domination.
Right? Oh.
Did you, any of you guys watch the documentary on American Gladiators?
No, not yet.
Is that a recent one?
Yeah, I saw it on Netflix. It was really well done.
I'll have to check it out. Yeah. Yo, this guy's jacked. Holy shit.
Those dudes got fucked up and they had like no insurance.
Yeah. Because they probably got paid like $1,000 an episode, right?
I think they got like $500 and a gram of Coke.
Yeah. In the early 90s, yeah, I would be surprised if it was anything more than $500.
Damn, that's but pretty cool, right?
That's Wes Horton and his father Gemini from American Gladiators.
Like that one.
Yeah, that was good. Hey, can I do a dark one?
Yes.
Okay.
All right, I want to get dark here. All right. There's actually three people that were drafted in 1996 that you could reasonably say were either a murderer or directly responsible or present while murders happened. Two of those three people are NFL Hall of Famers. You have Ray Lewis.
Let's go.
and you have Marvin Harrison.
Okay.
So those stories are, we don't really know. It's speculative. So I decided to go with the guy who has the most obvious connection to the murder he was accused of. He was even charged for it. So we are going to talk today about Lawrence Phillips.
Ooh.
If you don't know the Lawrence Phillips story, buckle the fuck in. He was born in Little... I'm ready, baby. He was born in Little Rock, Arkansas in 1975. Grows up in California, West Covina.
Covina.
He's linebacker and running back. He gets recruited to play college ball at Nebraska. So these are like the teams that Shane was talking about last week, the 90s Cornhuskers.
Yeah.
He becomes the lead back his sophomore year. I just want to say this because we're going to talk a lot about his faults as a human. Lawrence Phillips was a fucking beast running back. He was 220, but he ran. If you watch his college tape, it reminds me of like Dalvin Cook. So if you ever want to see some good college ball highlights, it's Lawrence Phillips for sure. So in his sophomore season, he had 11 straight games of over 100 rushing yards. All right. Yeah. And since the two quarterbacks for Nebraska were always hurt and shitty, he was running for 100 rushing yards a game against 8 or 9 man boxes on every play.
Jesus Christ.
That's crazy.
He was so good that both of his quarterbacks were hurt during the season, and he managed to be the main offensive player on an undefeated national championship team with over 1,700 rushing yards at 20 years old.
Jeez.
Just drink it in. 2 weeks after winning the Natty, he was in court pleading not guilty to counts of disturbing the peace, assault, and vandalism for putting his hands around the throat of another student. Phillips said he was trying to break up a fight, and the case is dismissed. So assault is a bad thing, but I just can't get hard for the NCAA investigating Phillips' eligibility for receiving a $100 meal from an agent at some point during that season.
Thanks, SMU.
Right? So we go to his junior year. Against Michigan State, he rushes for 206 yards and 4 touchdowns on 22 carries.
Yes.
I hope you're ready to follow that with a no, because as soon as the team gets home, he breaks into his ex-girlfriend's apartment and physically assaults her.
What the hell?
Yeah, exactly. From yes to no. I don't want to get into the details because it's fucking horrible. He gets arrested, but he doesn't get kicked off the team.
Yay, football.
He gets suspended, but Coach Tom Osborne, so listen to this. This is the fucking, oh my God.
Tom Osborne has a statue next to the guy that I talked about last week. They're on the same statue. So Tom Osborne is like idolized forever in Nebraska history.
Keep that in mind. Keep that in mind with this part coming up here. Interviewers ask Tom Osborne, if Lawrence Phillips did that to someone you love, would you care more? And he walks out of the interview. Oh yeah. People are pissed. Nebraska students and faculty were openly protesting. The faculty sent a letter to the university proposing a rule where any player arrested for a violent crime should be kicked off the team. And Osborne's final response was kicking him off the team would be bad for him because he needs some sort of structure in his life.
Yeah, so let's give him the spotlight. That's a good idea.
Yeah, so he'll be fine. So well, after
power always works well.
After his 6-game suspension ends, he comes back. And he's backing up future Green Bay Packer Amon Green in the Cornhuskers backfield. Okay. So he goes to start in the national championship and puts up 165 yards and 3 touchdowns. So he's still really good.
I don't clap.
Right?
Yeah.
So he gets his second natty, goes pro. He was considered the best skill position player in the 96 draft, goes sixth overall to the Rams. The Rams on that same day traded future Hall of Famer Jerome Bettis to the Steelers, just being like, here you go, bro. Lawrence Phillips, it's all you. His first year in 11 starts, he had 193 carries for 632 yards and 4 touchdowns, which isn't great, but for a rookie running back on a shit team, whatever.
Right.
So then, 1997, baby. Here we go. In 9 starts, he actually had more yards than his rookie year. But in the year and a half that he'd been there, he had 3 arrests, he had another DUI, and he had 2 probation violations.
How do you not get cut?
Well, in November, he gets cut. So Dick Vermeil pulled Phillips in and said, between the arrests and inconsistent play, he was being demoted to second string. Phillips decided to skip practice and meetings that day, and they cut him.
Ouch.
In the press conference, Dick Vermeil cried and said he was probably the best running back he ever coached. So in 2016, a documentary came out where Vermeil explained at that time, Phillips had collapsed during pregame warmups before his last game. And when they went to go check on him, he reeked of alcohol.
Oh, wow.
And so one of the things I read about Phillips said that Vermeil didn't usually make excuses for guys, but Phillips was so talented, he gave him extra chances. So let's just add Dick Vermeil to the list with Tom Osborne there.
Enablers.
Here we go. He goes to Miami, Lawrence Phillips, plays for 2 games, and then gets cut after being arrested and pleading no contest to assaulting a woman in a nightclub. He takes 1998 off and then decides to go to NFL Europe in 1999 and just wrecks shit. He sets all of the NFL Europe rushing records by a lot.
Are you serious?
Uh-huh. So San Francisco decides to kick the tires on Phillips in the fall because he plays in the spring in NFL Europe. So 49ers sign him in the fall. He does not get arrested in San Francisco, but he's the number 2 running back and kick returner. He's also a terrible pass blocker. So his game against the Cardinals on Monday Night Football in Week 3 is the perfect encapsulation of Lawrence Phillips. He scores the game-clinching touchdown on a 68-yard run. But earlier in the game, his missed block on the blitzing Aeneas Williams caused the concussion that ended Steve Young's career.
Wow.
So, by late fall, the 49ers were sick of Phillips, who was making excuses to not practice, mocking coaches. And at one point in a coaches-only meeting, the running back coach said, if Phillips is on the plane for the next game, I'm staying here. 49ers waive him. He goes to the Arena Football League and is cut because he decided to leave the team and not tell anyone about it. Then he goes to Canada. I don't know how this dude got a fucking visa, okay?
Yeah, he should not have be able to have any form of passport. Canada should have been like, because in America, if you get a DUI, you can't go to Canada.
So he somehow gets his visa. He wins the Grey Cup in his first year with the Montreal Alouettes, and he's an all-star that year, by the way. He holds out for more money in 2003 and gets cut when he returns to the team because he had been arrested for sexual assault. Then he signs with the Calgary Stampeders and gets cut because he gets into a screaming match with his head coach.
He's a monster.
Dude, this is like pre-AB.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's... We're almost to the peak here. So this ends his Canadian football career, and we don't hear about Lawrence Phillips again until August 2005. I'm going to take a breath here. So Lawrence Phillips in 2005 is playing a game of pickup football with some teenagers in LA, and there's some sort of dispute during the game, so Lawrence Phillips gets in his car and drives it into the teenagers.
What?
Uh-huh. So he gets arrested for hitting teenagers with his car. And when he's arrested, it comes up that he's got multiple warrants for his arrest in San Diego, as well as LA for domestic assaults. He goes to trial and is found guilty on 7 counts, including felony assault with a deadly weapon, aka a car. He gets 10 years. While serving, he gets found guilty for a different extremely disturbing domestic assault case and gets 25 more years added on. In April 2015, Phillips' cellmate, a guy named Damien Soward, is found choked to death. And Phillips is charged with murdering his cellmate, and the state is considering the death penalty. And then on January 12, 2016, Lawrence Phillips is found unresponsive in his cell and passed away from unaliving himself.
Well, not much of value was lost on that day, so...
Also, interestingly enough, the cellmate that he killed, Damian Soward, his cousin was a guy named RJ Soward who was drafted in the first round by the Jaguars. Small world.
What?
So this might seem like a bummer, you know, it's a sad ending, but when you really read about what his arrests were for, you're going to be like, okay, okay. His brain was given to test the CTE and he's listed as a player who is suspected but not confirmed to have had it. Some of his letters to his coaches that he wrote in prison came out, and the only thing worth noting is that he hated how liberals were using the actions of the players and owners as part of their agenda, and saying if they get their way, they're going to get rid of all the owners out, like Donald Sterling is a victim of this. So, fuck you, Lawrence Phillips. Good riddance. That's my 96.
Lawrence Phillips. Out with Reagan. In hell.
Yep, that's Lawrence Phillips. Fuck you, bro.
All right, my guy's not like super intense like that. My guy's just kind of a guy, but he's kind of a world traveler. He is involved in the Grey Cup. He's involved in a bunch of teams like your guy was, as
Let's
well
go.
As the World Football League covered nice. In 96 in the World Bowl, the Frankfurt Galaxy versus the Scottish Claymores. My nice. Guy is the MVP of that game, Yo Murphy.
Okay.
Yo Murphy had 163 receiving yards and 3 touchdowns in that game.
Yo.
There was almost 40,000 people in attendance in that game, the highest in Claymore's history and the largest crowd ever assembled for an American football game in Scotland history.
Damn. The Highland Games.
Yeah. So before that, he actually played for the BC Lions in 93, where he'd win the 94 Grey Cup. So then he'd end up signing to the Scottish Claymores and he'd play from 95 to 93. And he just kind of bounced all around the NFL because everyone's like, this guy's clearly talented, but maybe he just doesn't have it. Which is like kind of, I did this exercise based on watching a lot of preseason games because like preseason really makes you understand like these are good athletes, but like to be consistent in the NFL, like you have to be a very rare percentage and be very lucky, right? Or like,
correct.
This dude's a monster like your guy was, but in different talent pools, you kind of aren't shit.
Yep.
So he played for the Bucks, the Vikings, the Outlaws, the Rams, the Chiefs, before going back to the Great White North and playing for the Renegades in Ottawa, and then played for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
Nice.
And then he ended up retiring, being the only player ever to play in the regular season for the CFL, NFL, XFL, NFL Europe, and as well as to suit up in the Super Bowl, the Grey Cup, and the World Cup Championship, or the World Bowl Championship games.
That's fucking sick.
Yeah, so he's just kind of been doing whatever, and he actually is a performance coach in Florida, where he's coached Darius Shaq Leonard, Sky Moore, a bunch of Bears for some reason that go down there, Deuce Vaughn. So he's just one of those weird guys where he's kind of had his spoon in a bunch of different soups and he's still doing his thing.
I love that. I love the people that are like, yeah, man, I was just here and here and here and here and here. And I know that probably fucking sucks for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I have to look up his career earnings, right? But like, I don't know if you're getting paid like $1 million per team, like, I mean, I'm sure you're not getting that money in Canada, but if you're getting like $1 million and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8, you know what I mean? If you're playing, it's not like Justin Jefferson money, but for a dude who like didn't do anything in the NFL, that's pretty good.
I would just imagine though that like you're always renting, and it's just always funny to me to think about the fact that there's an NFL player that's worried about his security deposit. That just kind of makes me laugh.
Well, it's like I was watching some video the other day about like how guys will go and play in China for basketball, and they're like, yeah, sometimes we just don't get paid. And I'm like,
yep.
What? How does that happen? You know what I mean?
Yep.
Or like
my
guy that I covered a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago where he was like, I was just living in Cleveland out of a hotel for 2 years.
Yep.
All right, Ryan, take us home.
Do it up.
All right, guys. We got another famous 96. Let's talk a little bit about Danny Stubbs.
Did he make the barbecue sauce?
I don't think so, but he does have some notoriety in the food world.
Yes.
All right.
God.
Famously played for a bunch of teams: Frisco, Dallas, Cincinnati, Philly, even the Dolphins. Went to school at University of Miami. He was actually so good that early on, or no, this was his senior year, they caught on to this guy being so good that opposing teams just started scheming plays in the opposite direction of where he was lined up. And he still managed to get 75 tackles and 9.5 sacks.
Damn. Do you know what year that was?
87, I think.
Okay. Okay. So like the first U, like the U.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he was like with Michael Irvin and all those motherfuckers.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. He finished his college career at Miami as the all-time career single season sack leader, 17 and 86.
Damn.
And all time 39.5.
Good shit. Jeez.
He was he's obviously in the University of Miami Hall of Fame now.
Sure hope so.
yeah. Then Frisco drafted him 33rd overall in the 88 draft. He had 25 tackles and 6 sacks in his first season. Looks like his best season was probably when he got traded to Dallas. He had 7.5. Or no, it was with Miami actually later in his career. He had 9 sacks. That was his best sack here. But
it's a lot of sacks, bro.
Yeah. But the cool thing about this guy is that he has his own sandwich named after him. All right. Yes. The Stubbs sandwich. All right. Okay. So some guy when he was playing in Dallas for a few years at a Dallas restaurant, it might even be a suburb, created this Stubbs sandwich in honor of him. And it's been known John Madden, every time he went to call games in Dallas, like as a commentator, he always had his like crew pick up like 4 of them and he would eat them throughout the day. Now,
yes.
now wait till you hear what the sandwich is. All right. So, you know, like Texas toast, it's like that really perfect square. It's really thick, but it's like bigger than normal white bread toast.
It's airy. It's got a lot of butter and garlic on
it. So it's the sandwich is those two toasted, with 4 breakfast sausage patties, 4 slices of bacon, 2 slices of cheese, 2 eggs, and that's the Stubbs sandwich.
Oh my God.
That's so much for breakfast. And Madden would eat 4 of them throughout the day.
I'm a skinny California guy, right? Like I weigh like 150 on a good day. And I'm always like curious. I'm like, man, how do people get like John Madden size? There it is.
Good God.
Yeah. That's famous defensive end, Danny Stubbs.
That's famous sandwich, Danny Stubbs. Like, holy shit. That's, wow.
You can still get it to this day, I believe, at whatever restaurant it is.
That's fucking food for thought right there. All right, so now we're shifting. So we're going to take a break, and we're going to shift into hater mode. We've got landmine players coming up, and then we've got some futures bets that we're looking at from a hater mindset, and then we're going to take a trip, boys. So we'll see you on the other side of the break, and goodbye. We're fucking hating. We're hating. We did, I don't know if you heard about this, but we did a whole bunch of team previews over the last like month. And then we like turned them into some like words and we like published those. We published 72,000 words of team previews this year.
Isn't that wild? So like I articulated that someone the other day, they're like, what the fuck? And I'm like, yeah, like, each team that I personally covered was 6 pages, and then we accumulate everything with everybody and we cut it down, and then We gave you the most boiled down 100% pure cocaine line that you could possibly have of all of our research, and it's 72,000 words.
Yep, it is. Ryan, I don't know if you know this, but our 2023 team previews are only like 1,800 words shorter than Frankenstein.
Nice.
All right, so we have guys that we love. We have guys that we hate. We've spent a lot of time talking about guys that we love. Today, we're going to talk about guys that we hate. So let's start our hater segment. Shane, you're a fucking hater.
That's true. I've, in the Discord, outed myself as a proverbial hater.
You're a hater, so why don't you hate for us?
All right, so we've used this term landmine consistently. I've kind of ramped it up in my vocabulary of the last couple of weeks, and I've kind of like needed to explain it, right? Where like, to me, it's a vision of a bust at ADP. It's either going to turn you into hamburger meat, or it's going to kill your season, or it'll blow off your leg and severely disadvantage you in your season. So I'm going to cover two guys. We can go one at a time each. I'll start with my guy who I think will absolutely kill your season based on where he's being drafted at, based on PFF ranking. So if you want to argue and pull up ADP from anywhere else, I'm fine with that. I don't care, but I just use this for consistency on my end. Number two overall in PPR, Austin Eckler.
Boo.
I'm a Chargers fan, right? Like, this dude was the savior of our season last year. But for fantasy purposes, being picked before Justin Jefferson in PPR, before Jamar Chase, and after CMC is like ludicrous to me. Like, I could get behind CMC as 101. I get it. We've done it. You know what I mean? There's wheels up for him in the system that he's in, whatever. But Tony did a fantastic breakdown of the Chargers, or the Kellen Moore tendencies, and how the Chargers are kind of going to implement that into their system. They're also on the FA site, like Tony said. I don't think the West one is up yet, but it will be up shortly. So if you want to go during there. And it sucks ass to draft a player at position X and have them finish 10 positions further than that, because that's just how you ruin your fantasy season, right? If you draft RB15 at RB2, you just wasted your first round pick when you could have anybody else to make up for that difference in your point schemes.
Yep.
I don't think Austin Eckler is going to fall out of the top 12. I'm not saying he's going to bust. I'm not saying that he's going to be really bad. But if you spend like number two overall for RB8, it's just not a good return. Like, you might think it's a fine return. Like, you might have a difference of team build, and other guys might make up the difference. Someone might have a historic year. But it's just bad process because you're missing out on opportunity. And you're begging Austin Eckler to finish as the RB1 at number two overall based upon our research. The probability of that happening is going to take a lot of things to go wrong for other players for Austin Eckler to succeed. That he has to beat Saquon, Bijan, CMC, Josh Jacobs if he plays.
You know what Derek I mean? Henry, so many, baby.
Nick Chubb, Tony Pollard. Like, there's so many things that have to go wrong for other people for him. And I know Tony and I, we talked about this off air, but like, he's also one of you guys you want to talk about. So if you have anything else to add to the Austin Eckler hate train at ADP.
Well, you brought up a good point. Like, he's 30 with a shitload of mileage on him.
And he said too, that he doesn't want all those yards, and he's never had over 1,000 yard rushing season. So unless you take the 185 targets that he had last year and give it to him again this year, and his touchdown rate stays really high, I don't know how you meet these, how this probability happens, right? It's just it's just something I'm not willing to risk at such a high point in the draft.
Ryan, full PPR, Austin Eckler or Derrick Henry?
Derrick Henry.
My man.
Well, cause my like, man. Where are you getting Henry? 202, 204, yep. Right? Like, like I said before on the Titans coverage, I'm going to go with Derrick Henry until the fucking wheels fall off. I'll just buy him cheaper every year until I see his name retired. Yeah. It is what it is. And yep. Like, I don't blame people for wanting to be on an Eckler. I don't fault them for being like, I'll take him at like 106, because 106 is kind of a dead spot for me. Sure. I think I'd take him at like 109 if like the people that I rip go, right? I don't want to reach down into the depths of someone else, but that area is more palatable to me than the number two overall pick. So, yeah. Sorry, Austin Eckler. I love you, bro, but for fantasy purposes, I'm out.
Landmine. All right. Ryan, let us know.
Here's a real quick landmine. Let's talk about Deebo Samuel. I am fading him this year. All right. Not because of his ADP. I mean, it's his ADP's around 37, something like that. On most,
I think that's expensive for Debo.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's putting him what, late, third round,
late third, early fourth is kind of where he tends to go.
We saw last year with the emergence of Christian McCaffrey that his production just started going down, right?
Yeah.
They just didn't need him to run anymore.
He was hurt, though. I will add that caveat.
Okay, that is true.
It's not as important as it is, but it is still usage.
His presence is not going to be needed as much, with Christian McCaffrey, with a healthy Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
Not to mention he plays in Shanahan's super run heavy offense anyway. But I hate Debo Samuel this year. He's probably, I think his line was at like 770 yards or something like that on FanDuel the other day when I was looking.
That's too high.
Yeah.
And I think the problem with is, like Tony Nebai said, and I think we even mentioned in the Niners section, is if Brandon Ayuk or Debo Samuel were on different teams, we'd be clamoring for both of these guys in the third round. We'd be fighting hand over fist the T. Higgins, Devonta Smith tier. But the fact that the Kyle Shanahan system has so many good offensive weapons, you're relying on like a Jimmy Jue 2.0 to feed all these people to have this dividend of like, I hope to get the guy who does it, right? Where like when you have a 1-in-4 shot in that, it's bad odds just to begin with. And then you have to hope that everything falls in line within that way. And then we saw it like on my data breakdown, once George Kittle's in there, Debo's target share like goes down significantly because the scheme is set up for Brock Purdy to utilize a tight end that who runs shorter routes. And I love Debo Samuel. I will actually have shares of him this year, but the fact of, if you could get anybody cheaper in that offense, Debo's the most expensive outside of CMC, obviously. Yeah. But for his price, it's a bigger risk.
Right. Would you rather have Ayuk or Debo?
I would rather have Brandon Ayuk because Brandon Ayuk goes in like the sixth round, that's like the
mad value.
That's like the only downside of that spot is you have to choose between him and Christian Kirk, and we've been like beating the drums for Christian Kirk for fucking the whole offseason, right, in the sixth round. Right. So it's like.
Well, I love, and I think it's like you said, we all love Debo Samuel as a player. He's fucking awesome. True. He's just not for fantasy.
It's the Shanahan and Brock Purdy thing. Like you have to expect Brock Purdy to put up like Tom Brady level numbers to have all of these guys be successful in fantasy.
Right.
And I'm not spending my fourth round pick on the priciest lotto ticket of the bunch.
Yeah.
All right. Sure. So I'm going to go with my first landmine. It's not as spicy as either of yours, as a matter of fact. It's actually pretty cash. I'm going to go with ADP 78 overall, James Cook. We talked about this during the Bills episode, but like I said, drafting Bills running back is hoping that they're going to somehow eke out this fantasy relevance that's never been there before. It's always a timeshare. The highest any primary back has gotten in terms of fantasy points per game is RB24. Since Josh Allen has been the guy.
Blech.
They're set up to run extremely well. They run into light boxes constantly. But at the same time, like Buffalo running backs had the lowest amount of carries in the league with 291 across the backfield.
That is a terrible number.
Yes. Singletary and Cook were great, especially on first down. But even on first down, Buffalo passed at the third highest rate in the league. He's third in the league on yards before contact. So like he's getting blocked for. But he's never been an alpha back ever. And like he only had 4 games with double digit carries last year. Are you really going to spend? You want your RB2 to be that guy? There's no fucking way. Give me volume, right?
Didn't he only have like 110 touches last year?
Yeah, it was
like,
not.
In like 15 games.
Not a lot. And like Damian Harris and Latavius Murray were brought in. Harris is the goal line bruiser. But like Latavius Murray, I hate to say it, everywhere this man goes, he produces.
You know who's on that take two with you? JJ Zacharyson.
He's one of the most unsexy picks in late round fantasy football, but I'm going to have a lot of Latavius Murray exposure in redraft.
Well, that's the thing too, right? It's like James Cook was also like the high point of him last year is he was running, he was being ran out the slot, where now that position has been erased because they drafted Dalton Kincaid to take that role. So it's like, okay, well now what are we doing?
Yep. So Josh Allen's going to take a third of that backfield's work, and nothing we've ever seen would indicate that any of these backs will be featured to the extent that would make them worth their cost. So that is my first landmine. That's James Cook.
All right, I'm sticking with another dud running back, and I talked about him on the Rams episode. Sorry, Cam Akers.
Ooh.
I get it. He's not your RB1, but I've seen a lot of people build around him, or not build around him, but kind of anchor their team as him with as their RB2 in confidence. PFF, again, caveat, has him as RB19 around the sixth round. Granted, it's not make or break around this period, but to me, there's too much against Akers that we can talk, like I referenced in the past, and I'll reference again, to put him above Ken Walker, RB21, James Conner, RB23, David Montgomery, RB28 on PFF.
Give me all of those guys.
He's above DJ Moore, Christian Watson, right, DeAndre Hopkins, Brandon Ayuk, and Mike Williams.
Give me most of those guys.
I don't even like half of those guys this year in redraft, but I would take every single one of them above Cam Akers.
Sure.
So the short of Cam Akers of why I'm out, just based on talent pool, he's got a terrible O-line, terrible offense. He's never had more than 200 touches in a year. He doesn't catch passes. I get it. He looks good at the end of the season, but don't fall for that. We've done it 2 years in a row. Oh, he's had no competition. Sorry, the McVay system's a split backfield, and they're talking about Kyron Williams kicking up again. And because Kyle Shanahan just operates, McVay. They're always the same person.
They're the fucking same.
Yeah. They want to split the backfield because they're just going to run him into the ground. So someone is going to try to compete with Akers, regardless if you believe it's Evans, someone else. So Tony was the stats guy, and what was his projected ceiling? Like RB28 based on last year's production?
Yeah, if he's lucky.
So at RB29 price, I'm good at keeping my feet and moving on to draft.
Nope. Fuck him. I have no interest in Cam Akers.
Ryan.
All right, Ryan, hate it up, bro.
All right. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I also have an LA Ram. Cooper Kupp. I am Jesus fading Christ. Cooper Kupp this year.
Jesus Christ.
All right, his ADP's around 6 right now. I'm not taking him that early.
I see him go 3, dude. I see him go 4. It's crazy.
All right, let's talk a little bit of science, all right? Let's talk about Madison. Like, all right, this guy, he injured his hamstring in early August, right, and still hasn't played at all. But as we all know, hamstrings are nagging, and he's coming off of a really bad ankle injury from last year where he missed half the season, the latter half of the season.
Yep.
So he's dealing with coming back from that. He's got these hamstring issues. Now, I found a study where from like 2009 to 2020, they studied 2,075 hamstring injuries with a mean age of 26 years. They found that with those 2,075, around 1,800 were just strains, 88%. 236 were partial tears, 11.3%. And complete tears, a little under 1%. Of those 2,075 injuries, 796 were recurrent throughout the year, and 247 of them being a same-season re-injury. So, if you're going to sit here and tell me that Cooper Kupp's going to catch more than 1,200 yards on the season, that is provided that Matt Stafford's head is screwed on, right? He's had all those head issues the last year. Like, who knows? He had one concussion, be out the rest of the year.
Yeah, that's my big caveat of Cooper Kupp is, when does Stetson Bennett take over?
Right. And if you think Cooper Kupp's going to play in all 17 games, you're sorely mistaken. I would give him half the season to maybe 10. I don't know. And that's not going to generate over 1,200 yards with the line is right now at 1,225 and a half.
I think his line is over like 110 catches too.
Yeah, I'm severely punching the over on all his stuff, his season-long props.
You mean his under?
Yes, sorry, the under, yeah.
Yeah, it's knuckle up.
Did I say over? Segment.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute.
We got bamboozled.
More money for Ryan.
So like I said, that's a good percentage of those injuries to just be nagging and just having to be sitting out all year trying to recover from it because you're owing 110% every Sunday.
Makes me want to fade Keenan Allen now that you said that, those statistics.
Stop it. Stop this.
I'm a Chargers fan. We're just used to getting shit on, right? Nobody cares about us, but hey, we got to call it out.
I have an obscene amount of Keenan Allen exposure in best ball.
If he's wide receiver three, all in. If he's your flex play, I don't give a shit. But if you're making him your wide receiver one, you're fucked.
Not to mention this study also says that wide receivers are the most prone position in the NFL to these hamstring injuries.
I mean, like you said earlier in the episode, we saw Jerry Jeudy go down today.
Yeah.
This is the worst day of my life. All right, let me drop a landmine here. You guys have like outtaken me so hard in this episode. I have this like weak little limp final landmine here,
and you're too happy. That's why.
It's you know me, beacon of sunshine. It's Christian Watson at 55 overall. I think Christian Watson's awesome. I think he's fun at football, but like, hey man, you catch 41 passes, but 7 of them are touchdowns. Like, come on. Are we really, doing this? We're really talking ourselves into this guy in round 7 with this insane touchdown rate. He had on 65 targets, the 22nd most red zone targets in the NFL.
Jesus Christ.
He had an 18.8 touchdown rate on his catches. I'm let that sink in.
Okay. Who is this quarterback then? Jordan Love?
Let's be real though, he's sick after the catch. Like he's getting like over 6 yards after the catch. He could return on value, but you're expecting a crazy amount of touchdowns.
Cuz what is he, fifth round?
55, so yeah, like mid fifth.
Okay.
Cam
Akers or Christian Watson?
Ooh,
I'm trading out.
No, there's no trades in redraft. What the fuck are you talking about?
If I had to pick one, it's probably Watson.
Yeah, you play for ceiling. He's gonna give you the boom week, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, if he's your flex play, I'm not mad about it, right? But having these expectations that he's going to have this like gigantic leap and like Justin Jefferson-esque breakout, it's like, no, it's just not in the cards.
Well, so like Jordan Love, all he's shown is the tendency to throw short. And so I looked at Christian Watson's numbers between 0 to 9 yards. 21 targets, pretty impressive. 16 catches for 164 yards, but 63 of those yards came on a breakaway run against Philadelphia. So out of 21 targets, not counting his crazy run, he had 15 catches for 101 yards. That's not great.
That's a Cooper Kupp stat line.
That's
for half a game.
Right? So yeah, that's my landmine at ADP. That's Christian Watson.
That's fair. I mean, I drafted him in Dynasty just to see what's up, but I'm the same way. He flashed last year, but like he's just one of those guys where I'm like, I'm cool missing out. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can have him.
I'm going to start our next segment. We're going to continue our hate and we're going to talk about some season props that we think fucking suck. So I'm starting. I'm going to talk about my hater shit part 2. I'm going under 4.5 rushing touchdowns for Dalvin Cook.
Whoa.
All right. It seems low. So hear me out.
You said you were coming in with the limp dick takes. That's a take.
I'm ready, bro. I'm telling you why. Dalvin had 8 rushing touchdowns last year in Minnesota as the primary back. Only 2 of those 8 rushing touchdowns were longer than 5 yards. He also led the league in red zone snaps last season with 147 and only had 6 tutties. So he's going to New York where the backfield's super crowded. And as I can see it, both Michael Carter and Izzy Abanikanda have better goal line profiles. And once Brees is fully healthy and ready to be the primary back, I would assume that he gets most of the red zone work. So yeah. I think that it's a bet that I'm willing to sweat for the first 2 or 3 weeks of the year when he gets 3 touchdowns. But I think that Dalvin Cook's under at 4.5 rushing touchdowns is one of my favorite hater plays of the offseason.
Well, yeah, because like as soon as Brees comes back to form, dude, he's just getting cast to the shadow realm. It doesn't matter how much they paid him. Like, Brees Hall is just better at football at this point in his career than Dalvin Cook.
That's correct.
Did you happen to write down what was the juice on that?
It's preseason props. They're both -112.
I hate that shit. That was like the whole part of my exercise was like, how do we make money out of these bets right now? Everything was so in the middle. I'm like, this is stupid.
Yes.
I did hit the spice though on this one, so I'll go next. It's not sexy, but it is a hater in the context of I like making money and flexing on people, and I'm also not picking a favorite to win the division. I'm picking the Falcons to win the NFC South.
Okay.
At +210 right now.
Wow. Okay.
So Arthur Smith was one win away last season from taking the Falcons to the playoffs with Marcus fucking Mariota. just think about that context based on everything I've told you about this historically bad quarterback. He brought him that far with that guy. Sure, they had less than a 500 record, but I don't care about that. You can get into the playoffs with less than 500 record. It's still winning the division, and we're still winning money. I don't care. The Falcons drafted their weapon, Bijan Robinson, who's been looking crisp out there on the field when you have seen him on the field. Kyle Pitts is back and ready. Drake London looks good back in form. Good connection with Desmond Ridder. And that's all he has to be, is Desmond Ridder. He doesn't have to be great. He doesn't have to be outstanding. Just run the offense. They padded their defensive depth in the draft. They're very formidable to me in comparison to the other people division. Sure, New Orleans does have a much better defense, and that's they're going to be the main prop up of their team. And I do feel like our true love of Derek Carr is going to let us down to expectations of what we want him to be. Even though he does provide the best situation that he's kind of ever been in to me in the NFL, besides having Devontae Adams playing with him.
Easy, yeah.
I'm not worried about the under of 4.5 wins of Tampa Bay with now quarterback of Baker Mayfield. Carolina has a rookie quarterback with the really difficult first 6 weeks of the schedule. And I think that Atlanta can kind of gain some traction in the time frame and kind of get ahead in that division. Now, if they did trade for Lamar, like we pondered the Orban, this bet would be a -1,000 here and we wouldn't make any money. But as of right now, we gotta trust Desmond Ridder to make us a little bit of some pocket change.
I like that take. I think that's a solid take. All right, Ryan, lay it on us, brother.
I agree with Shane. Falcons will be really good this year, but one of the lines I was looking at earlier, I didn't like, and I really want to hammer the under on this one. Bijan Robinson's total rush yards on the year. It's at 1,100.5.
Oh my God, that's so high.
I agree with Shane. This running offense is going to be really good, but I think Algier looked very good last year, and they're going to kind of utilize them like in a tandem. That's just going to be that really good 1-2 punch. And we could potentially see both of them get close to or a little bit over 1,000 yards, but I don't think 1,100, because they're not just going to abandon Algier, and they'd be wise not to. They should run these two guys like a tandem so they stay healthy all year.
You are in such a minority in saying that, and I love it.
Which is true, though, because like I've been thinking about that a lot lately, because I've just been hammering, take Bijan 104, take him 105, right? But like when you think about it actually practically, they're trying to win the division. They've built their roster in such a way that they're playing themselves out of a top-end quarterback, so they're going to have to trade up if Desmond Ridder isn't the truth or whatever.
Yeah, and like you said, they made it to the they made it to the playoffs, right, last year.
They almost came out.
Yeah, that's right. So like they know how to win with just pure running ability. They ran the ball more times than any other team last year.
Yeah. Right? And that's the thing too, is I think
why abandon it? What's working?
I think Tyler Algier is going to be at the end of the season when we pin and we do our season recap, he's going to be the most hated player in fantasy football because he's going to be a guy who is going to take away snap shares from Bijan. He's going to be a guy who takes away goal line shares at points, right? And people are going to be fucking mad about that fact. And it's just, you have to deal with that fact of he's going to get touches. He's not going to have what he had last year, but he can have 35 to 40% of the rushing touches, right?
Sure. And not to mention they still have Cordarrelle Patterson on their roster.
He's going to get touches too.
Yeah. Somehow.
I don't mind that.
I think he gets a little, maybe close to 1,000, maybe a little over 1,000, but not as high as 1,100.
Well, and let's also take into mind that like he could still rush for 800, 900 yards and catch 50 passes.
I was going to say that. I was like, if passing yards aren't included in that, dude, he can get 800 yards in passing. And
yeah, but
fine,
this is just total rush yards.
Right. Yeah. So it might, like, you could theoretically have it both ways, where he doesn't break 1,100 and is still worth the pick.
But he could get 1,500, 1,600 all-purpose.
Austin Eckler, let's go.
There he is. All right, I'm making my hater bet, too. I am smashing the under for the Las Vegas Raiders at 6.5 wins.
There's no way they win that many games. I don't understand what Vegas is doing here. They should be closer to, like, the Cardinals.
They are built to completely fucking collapse. They have a competent game manager at quarterback, a star running back, and a god-tier wide receiver. That quarterback has only played one complete season in his career, and their backups are old-ass Brian Hoyer and cool-ass rookie Aiden O'Connell.
Yeah, dude, that's what's that character that he looked like from Farva? Superbad? Yeah, it looked like Farva. That was so funny.
My co-teacher coached Aiden O'Connell when Aiden O'Connell was in high school. Ryan, he's from Long Grove.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's local. So the Raiders are also doing a great job of completely alienating their star running back. And their defense is hoping that an aging Max Crosby and the rookie edge Tyree Wilson can generate enough pressure to cover for the fact that they have one of the worst defensive backfields in football. They have two games against Kansas City, two against the Chargers, two against the Broncos, which I think will be closer than people want to admit. And they also play Buffalo, Miami, Minnesota, and Detroit.
Yep. Rip.
Yeah, there it is. Under 6.5 wins. Las Vegas Raiders. Suck it.
This is not a hater segment in the total lens, but this is a hater segment on Cam Newton, right? Because I wanted to heat. I wanted to bet Anthony Richardson rushing yards, but I couldn't find anything on FanDuel. But I did find Anthony Richardson rushing touchdowns for the year.
Okay.
10 plus rushing touchdowns in the regular season at plus 490.
Holy shit.
Wow. That's, I thought it would be more, but that's crazy they're putting that out there. I mean,
and I'm pretty like confident in my ability before this whole JT shit happened that I would have kind of bet that before the season happened. I mean, we would have had better lines, but like now that JT's kind of out of the picture primarily, I don't see who's scoring points on that offense besides Anthony Richardson, right? Like, okay, so
the most rushing touchdowns by a quarterback ever in a year?
In a rookie year, it's 10 with Cam Newton. I looked it up.
Okay.
So he has to tie Cam Newton.
Yeah, so he has to tie it. Okay.
Or break Cam Newton's record, which I think this is why this line is in this, because he did break his RAS score at the combine, right? So, like, there's this weird duality of, like, system setup. And we've seen time and time again that rushing quarterbacks do vulture touchdowns for the running backs. And the only problem with me is I don't know how this offense is going to put up points without Anthony Richardson's legs. The big caveat to me for these, or I have two big caveats on this, is I don't know how they get close enough to the fucking red zone for him to punch it in, right? Like, if they can get within 30 yards, wheels up, right? But if they're going to be struggling in the intermittent area and they're not going to be able to chunk out the field, that's going to be the biggest issue for me with this bet. And they do face a pretty decent defensive pass efficiency slate. So if they can force feed Michael Pittman just to get 20 yards at a time, get him within there, because they do play the Titans twice. They play Baltimore, New England, and Pittsburgh, as well as Jaguar. the Jaguars. But they do face the Browns and the Texans twice, so there is hope that they're just going to mollywop them. Yeah, so that's my bet. It's kind of a moonshot play, but like we're seeing time and time again that these dudes come to the NFL and they kind of break fantasy and they can break the NFL, where I think it's possible, right?
I love that you're the only person in this podcast that lives in a state where you can't make bets, and you found the ones with the best odds.
That was, dude, I spent like an hour and a half trying to find shit. I'm like, how do we make money? How do we get fucking paid on this podcast?
Mm-hmm. All right, Ryan.
My last one, we, you know, briefly already talked about, was Cooper Kupp's reception yards. The line right now is at 12.25.5, and the juice is on the over. So I'm totally hammering the under because it's in the plus territory.
That's wild. You guys are all like, I hate that you're talking me out of Cooper Kupp right now. I fucking hate it.
I hate doing it, dude. I really do. Like, do my Rams research. It was rough.
I'll pull up the stat here in a second. But, you know, he's not going to be healthy all year. There's no way he's getting that many yards.
I don't even want to, like, I like we talked about, like, I hate betting on injury, right? But, like, it is a factor of the game. We have to consider that in our analysis. But there's so many things wrong in that fucking offense.
Right.
For, like, they've stripped that team down to the bare fucking bones. Or at least last year they were trying to, like, have a duct tape run to the Super Bowl. Where, like,
yeah,
they basically admitted during the offseason of, like, we're cashing the chips, right? Where it's like, what the fuck is that O-line going to do? How good is Stafford still, right? Those are me to the hangups. I don't doubt the talent of Cooper Kupp, but there's so many things that are going to go wrong.
Right.
Yeah, but they're going to trade for JT, so.
Fuck it, bro. Whatever. Get him off the get him off the Colts. Like that 45-minute rant of Jim Irsay being like, he's the greatest player I've ever seen. I'm like, oh, he's making the sales pitch.
Yep. Uh-huh. He's fucking Oliver Anthony-ing that shit, man.
Like the book, like right now, is so confident Cooper Kupp's gonna get more than 1,000 yards is minus 420. So no point in putting. So let's see. Oh, it's minus 10. It was like plus 100 earlier.
Right now it's minus 2,000 right now for 750 plus.
Yeah.
Right, but like, you know, if you don't think he's going to hit 12.25, you might as well just find his total line and just hit the under instead of trying to, you know.
Yeah, stack. like Ryan said, it's minus 420 right now for 1,000 plus.
They're
pretty confident. I mean, he'll probably get close to, if not over, a little bit, but yeah, he's definitely not getting 1,200 yards.
If he starts all 17, he smashes that.
Yeah.
100%. Well, yeah, but he's not. But if we figure, you know, 10 games he plays healthy, he'd have to get over 120 yards a game.
I'm still taking Cooper Kupp as wide receiver 3. I'm sorry.
So, haters want to hate.
But like, okay, so you do your draft, right? You have like the sharpest people that we've been doing with FA, right? You go Justin Jefferson 1, Chase at 2, CMC at 3.
It's Kelsey at 4 for me.
Kelsey at 4. And then you flip-flop Eckler, Tyreek, and then Kupp, right? Like,
yeah.
I don't blame anybody there. Like, I really don't. I know, like, we're doing this hater segment. Like, Cooper Kupp, to me, like, this is such, like, a stupid fence ride take, but it's like, he's either going to win people leagues or he's going to lose people leagues. There's no in between, right?
Well, yeah, right. Well, let me just say this. There was a huge debate. Do you remember the year that Derrick Henry came in and was averaging like almost like 150 yards and 2 touchdowns a game and then broke his foot in week 9?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, I understand that if you look at it from most perspectives, you're like, well, that sucks. But if I'm drafting a guy, I don't care what round it is. If they tell me that he's going to give me 15 points of positional advantage against my opponent for 9 weeks, that's a successful pick.
Yeah, that's true. And like Cooper Kupp was still the wide receiver 1 in points per game, even though he played like 12 games last year or 11 games. So like,
yeah,
the value is still there. I guess like you said, it just depends where you get that asset. Where if he's being force-fed 17 fucking targets a game for 10 games. Take it, right? Let it rip. Yeah. And then let your depth carry you through the playoffs. I think it just depends when that time comes, right? Of like, to me, I'd rather have it come at the later end of the season so I can just smooth my way to the championship as opposed to like duct taping my way through to be like, okay, how the fuck do I figure out this 20-point differential every week when it matters most?
Yeah. Ryan, I don't think your Cooper Kupp bias is bad process at all.
No,
I'm with Ryan. I'm with Ryan on this too. You know what I mean? But it, like you said, he's done it. That's the crazy thing, right?
I'm against it, but it's good process. Yeah.
I don't have anything against him. He's a great player, but he's not going to be healthy all year. And 1,225 yards is a lot for someone that could potentially play only 8 to 10 games.
But what is the purpose of the hater segment if we all agree, right?
That's true.
It's true.
We need to have some form of conflict, because if we're all agreeing on the same shit, it's just an echo chamber. I just need to hear different opinions.
That's a good point. All right. So Ryan, why don't you end us with a little geography? Why don't you take us on a trip, baby?
Sure. So this week, I took a little trip down I-96. All right.
Okay.
For anyone that doesn't know where I-96 is, it runs in the state of Michigan between Detroit and Lake Muskegon area up there, goes through Grand Rapids, goes through Ann Arbor, but also goes through this famous town. All right, guys, let's take a little trip to Lansing, Michigan. All right.
Okay. Okay.
I do know Lansing.
Home to the Michigan State Spartans football team.
Sparty.
This school has the Thomas M. Cody Law School. It is the largest law school in the nation. I don't know if that's like a measure of like how many people are there, or like by square feet, it's got 30 more square feet than Harvard or whatever. I don't know. But they have an interesting football team there that is part of the Women's Football Alliance. It's a full contact women's league, plays 11 on 11 that started in 2009. They have the Capital City Savages.
Okay.
The women's football team.
Risky name, but yeah.
Yeah, a little bit, but
it's a bit of a risky name, but okay.
They have a baseball team I always grew up liking the name. They have the Single A affiliate to the Oakland Athletics. The Lansing Lugnuts. I've always liked that team name. Outside of Michigan State football, there's not too much that really relates this town to football, but it is off of I-96. They have a famous head coach from this football team.
Uh-oh.
Chester Brewster.
Okay, good.
He was a head coach in like the early, like late aughts. I'm talking like 1900s, 1910s.
1910.
That's right. Get this. He coached 88 games. Take a guess how many of those games nobody scored on him. Shutouts.
64.
20.
It's a little high, and that's a little low. You meet in between. 49. 49 wow. Games out of 88 games that he coached, he shut out the opposition.
That's crazy.
Also, famous football coach, college football coach, Nick Saban, coached at Michigan State from 95 to 99. Yep. And in 1999, he led the Spartans to a 10-2 season. They beat Notre Dame. They beat Ohio State. They beat Michigan. They beat Penn State. They were the best Spartan team since 1965. Also, interesting fact, future head coach Josh McDaniels was Saban's graduate assistant on his coaching staff during that time.
Boo.
Let's talk about some famous people really quick. All right.
Yeah, let's go.
And one of TH Fantasy's favorite people is actually from the city. I don't know if you can guess it yet, but just wait. All right. So we've got Burt Reynolds, famous stash. Burt Reynolds is from the city.
Hell yeah.
We've got Larry Page, the co-founder of Google. We got a lot of sports players. Magic Johnson.
Oh.
We've got Mohsin Mohamed.
There you go. Friend of the pod.
Yep. We've got Geraldine Doyle, who was famously Rosie the Riveter from World War II.
Damn. Stuff.
Dude, we got the screenwriter of Top Gun is from the city. Right? Jim Cash. All right.
The original, the 80s Top Gun?
Yeah, the original.
I will say I like the second one better, but carry on.
Sure. We've got a professional wrestler known as Sabu, Terry Bronk.
Which is so funny when you break down his name and you're like, it's this guy. You're like, no fucking way.
Yeah, Sabu.
We've got actor and director Timothy Busfield. You probably know him from Field of Dreams or West Wing or one of my favorite movies he was in, where he played a Minnesota Twins baseball player, Little Big League.
Oh, classic. Hidden ball trick.
Yep. But the most famous actor of all time, as we all know, is one of TH Fantasy's favorite people. Actor, director, martial arts, black belt in all forms, Steven Seagal.
He's from
Lansing, Michigan.
What?
Yep.
No way.
Okay, on the next episode of 96.5, we're going to talk about only Steven Seagal for 2 hours.
2 hours? I'm going to do a lot of editing.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, I went through a few towns. It's like, oh, let's see what's going on in Grand Rapids. What's in Detroit? What's in Ann Arbor? What's in Muskegon? And then I was like, wait, Steven Seagal is from Lansing? All right, I don't care how relevant this is to football anymore. I have to do this town.
Dude. When we transition to new segments, we should just do towns where Steven Seagal has been in.
Sure.
Where he has an assault allegation.
So that's this week's City Stop, Lansing, Michigan.
Where the hell is Tim Allen from?
I think Detroit.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Or left suburb of Detroit.
No, he was born in Denver.
That's bullshit. Fuck you, Tim Allen. Tool man.
He is the tool.
Yeah, and he didn't even go. So he went to Central Michigan and then Western Michigan. He's a snitch. Whatever.
Pussy.
Yeah, fuck you, Tim Allen. Steven Seagal, how about it, man? You know, shout out to early TH Fantasy episodes where we used Steven Seagal's music as the intro, outro. And, like, we realized pretty quickly that I had to, like, vet those songs because we'd look at the lyrics and it was like, no, we can't put our names on this. Like,
no, yeah.
Steven Seagal talking about Punani is something that I'll never forget.
In a black scent, too.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
When we make it and he needs money to pay for his bail, we're going to have him on the pod. I'm like, hey,
sure.
Bro.
Oh, I would gladly. Dude, I would roll out a red carpet. We'd all wear kimonos.
Oh god, like we're gonna get canceled on an audio medium
for Steven, bro. Anything.
Oh my god, that's a lifelong goal. Maybe we could do one of those like a cameo. Does he do cameo? He's got to do cameo, right?
Probably, most likely.
Okay, when we win the best ball tournaments, we'll put all of that shit into the business format and then we'll do it.
Shout out to Cameo for letting people do hilarious things. I had a friend that did a spelling bee / trivia night, and he paid for Gilbert Godfrey to read one of the questions. It's fucking sick.
So when I look up Steven Seagal Cameo on Google, I get a link to a boner pill website.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. What a way to end a hater episode. Steven Seagal boner pills.
Right.
That's 96. 97 will come at you next week. And we're getting closer, guys. We're getting closer to the start of the season.
It's like 2 weeks.
Yeah. So until next time, stay cool. No earthquakes. And that's it. Good night.
Be well.
Good night.